What the FL? It's the Football League podcast mourning the death of the Panenka. Coming up, Cov back on song, Blade see red, Huddersfield abolish Grant, and Stockport survive a pain in the arse. Powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. And we're back on a Monday for you, looking back at all the weekend's action. Busy week in the Football League, but it's going to be all about what happened on Saturday and to a lesser extent Sunday. We're going to kick off, though. It's me, Matt, Adrian and Sam, as you know, with the big story of the weekend. Joe Alowu's sensational own goal in Stockport's win against Rotherham. You'll have seen this, I'm sure, but just in case, Hatters keeper Ben Hinchliffe wallops the ball straight into Alowu's bum and the ball ends up in the net. Who are you blaming for that, Clarkie? It's the goalie's fault, isn't it?
It's definitely the goalie. It's an interesting technique, isn't it, from Alowu to sort of just bend down. I think just
so the ball can clear his back, right?
Yeah, just getting out of the way might be advisable, but even so, the goalie has picked out, you know, he's picked out the centre of his backside quite beautifully, hasn't he? And it was something else. One of the goals of the season, absolutely.
Right off the rump. What's the inquest like in the dressing room after that, Sam? You can laugh about it, presumably, if you win the game.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Yeah, they'd definitely laugh about it. I'm not sure. They probably would have had complaints in equal measure, but yeah, I think it's the goalkeeper's error. I was so disappointed when I saw, I think it was Sam Nombe, score like quite a nice goal, because the rest of the goals in that game, have you seen them? It's like calamitous defending across the board. It's great. Even the winner was a bit of a scramble. Someone last ditch for Rotherham clearing it off the line, and Andresen, I think, gets the winner. But there was an equally good, well, not equally good, but there was another calamitous kind of deflection own goal amongst it as well. So yeah, some very, very strange goings on, but that was glorious. Danny Baker, God, rubbing his hands together, wasn't he? Getting ready in his 2026 return of own goals and gaffes.
Right off the rump. All right, before we get into it proper, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply, it's 18+, and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. All right, we'll start today with a standard sacking. And in unsurprising news, Huddersfield have parted ways with Lee Grant. This came after the Terriers' 3-1 defeat at Burton on Saturday. Owner Kevin Nagle said, entering this season with renewed optimism and hope, having proactively reshaped our first team throughout the summer, we were clear not only about our ambitions, but how we wanted to achieve them and the type of team on the pitch we wanted to enjoy alongside our supporters. Sadly, on current form, none of those objectives are being met. And with just under half the season remaining, we feel no other option but to make a change to put the side back on track. Sam, if your ambitions are as lofty as that and it's promotional bust, why would you hire a first-timer to oversee it, would be my question.
Yeah, it's a fair question. I suppose there's been examples of giving young managers an opportunity. The temptation here was probably that he'd been working with Kieran McKenna, who'd put together a really exciting, fantastically modern-looking Ipswich Town side. I'm sure he probably interviewed very well, he's got some really good ideas, but it's not translated to what we've seen on the pitch. And I think the supporters have been after him, been out for him for a number of weeks now. So we spoke about a month ago about that change in formation and the combination of Radulovic and May, for example, in the attack, along with maybe some other pieces of the jigsaw, which look to be a little bit better aligned. So to lose a struggling Burton, I think, was the final nail in his coffin. And it's those away games, isn't it? I think six times they've conceded three or more goals away from home. That's not the sign of a promotion-looking team. And so many good players in that squad. Still, you look at it, it's a who's who, isn't it, of celebrated League One footballers, even Mumba. That actually passed me by. Must have come in the last few weeks to add to Ledson, Deon Charles, Harness, May, Gooch. Wherever you look, you know, these are players that you'd have anticipated being in the automatic promotion reckoning. And when you consider 16 points from Cardiff, Lincoln's killed him as well. Lincoln being 10 points ahead of Huddersfield. If that's 2 or 3 points, then, you know, out of the top two, then it's not a massive problem at this stage, but given the amount of points they've got to make up, something had to give. So I have sympathy, because being, what, sixth, seventh in the league as they sit this morning is not a complete disaster, but with the outlay of finances, it probably doesn't measure up.
Yeah, they are sixth in the playoff places. Feel like losing Leo Castledine was a hammer blow for him. Liam Manning, odds on favourite to come in. Clarkie, that feels like quite a nice landing spot for him potentially.
Yeah, 2-7 on, isn't he? Yeah, it really looks like just a two-horse race at the moment with Manning and Darren Ferguson, more of a 5-1 shot. Some interesting outsiders, obviously Russell Martin, Tony Mowbray and Steven Gerrard are in there, but can't see that happening. It was just down to finances, wasn't it? They spent so much. There was so much expectation. And yeah, the fact that they're sixth doesn't matter. It's how far they off of... they are off of top two that really matters to the Huddersfield hierarchy. And over the last 12 games, they rank 17th in the form table, just 3 wins. So that I think was the issue. And also he's gone searching, hasn't he, with the different systems, gone to a back three of late and stuff. So yeah, they need a bit of stability, don't they, Huddersfield? I mean, since Corberan, was the last manager to last a season, right? Since then, 7 have come and gone at that club. So yeah, it's not ideal at all. But the players are there, as Sam said. A more experienced manager needs to come in. And I think Manning could be the guy. I think, by and large, his CV has far more ticks than crosses, doesn't it? I think he's a pretty good manager.
Couple of home games to start with for whoever does come in against Bradford and Luton. So big ones. All right, we'll get on to the weekend's football next, and we'll start in the Championship, where Coventry won for the first time since Boxing Day. They came from behind to beat Leicester in their derby-ish game. It means Lamps Lads are 6 points clear of second Borough and 8 ahead of the playoff pack. Particularly pleasing, Adrian, because they came from behind to do it. I mean, the stats will tell you that they deserved it, particularly the XG, but they're good at this, aren't they? It was sort of classic first half of the season, Coventry up against it for a bit, but find a way to win.
Yeah, look, it was a good game, first and foremost. Leicester brought plenty to the party, particularly in the first half, where they were definitely the better team. They created some really good chances, but Coventry didn't panic, and I think that's really important. And also, we saw the depth, didn't we, of available to Lampard. We've said that it's a small squad, but with players coming back now, Radoni's fit again, Torp's fit again, a couple of defenders out, yes, but that bench looked good, and he was able to turn to it in the second half. Obviously, Thomas Asante came on, Sakamoto came on, Hadji Wright came on, and they all had a part to play, didn't they, in the win in the end. I mean, they're scruffy goals, really. Very scruffy goals.
The winner wouldn't have been if it hadn't been turned in on the line, which I get why you do that, because it has to be. But it was amazing skill, poor defending, but amazing piece of skill from Sakamoto additionally.
Yeah, Luke Thomas was a little bit weak in the duel, wasn't he? Because Sakamoto's not the biggest lad. And yeah, he gets knocked off it too easy. And yeah, I don't think he could be absolutely sure that it was going in. So I don't blame him personally for tapping it in. But yeah, look, I think there are positives for Leicester here as well. They did okay. And that first half, the goal they scored, lovely little triangle on the edge of the box for Jordan James. There were definitely some positives there. But really, this is about Coventry getting a massive win. The nature of it will lift them. And yeah, you expect now for them to kick on. But look, with Ipswich and Middlesbrough both in great nick at the moment, they can't afford to have any more dips, can they, Cov? So let's see. But this was a good game and a fantastic 3 points.
I'm sure, Sam, you enjoyed, as I did, Ellis Sims after the equaliser, one of those marginally deflected goals, just patting his chest and mouthing, mine, yeah, that's mine, I scored that goal, that's definitely mine. I mean, Leicester, they could have taken something from this game, didn't they? Decord over Reed with a couple of chances to extend the lead. So as Clarkie says, some positives for them, but Frank Lampard will be feeling very relieved this Monday morning that he got his old side back.
Yeah, they were fortunate to only be one behind. Absolutely. I think Decord Overeed had the two best chances of the game. Certainly the first one, which he didn't catch, was a really presentable chance to go 2-0 and then could have been their afternoon. Although that said, we know that Leicester have had a habit of only turning up for 45 minutes of matches throughout the season. On Coventry's comeback, best points per game in matches they've conceded first in. That's the fourth time they've won, and they've taken another point in games that they've conceded first. So it's a reoccurring theme. I think even the second half of last season, so many points recovered, especially at home. The other Coventry point I wanted to make was SA, very good I mean, he feels like one of those loan signings you can get halfway through a championship season, which is top. I don't know whether he featured under Joe Edwards at Millwall, but maybe that's the relationship, maybe that's the connection which has seen him go to Cov. But he was very good. Obviously hit that really good strike, left footed strike, unfortunately not to score. But yeah, the depth that Clarkie mentioned, clearly the most important facet here, players coming back to hopefully get over that little dip that they've had. I think for Leicester, I think Nelson and Thomas have probably done quite well in light of some experienced players being hugely out of form, defensive players, but found wanting a little bit in this game. Yeah, and it's that department, and it's the striker, isn't it, at Leicester. The midfield and obviously the wide boy is really, really good. I mean, Jordan James has got 9 goals now. He's talismanic for them. He looks like such a leader. He's playing with incredible confidence, but unfortunately, he's playing with incredible confidence in a poor side at the moment for where they should be. So there are positives, absolutely, but they certainly don't outweigh the negatives.
It's just a sign, really, of how far Leicester have dropped, that their bench was significantly weaker than Coventry. You know, they weren't long ago, they were in the Premier League, and their sort of Cifuentes is turning to kids, isn't he? He's turning to Jeremy Monger, Louis Page, guys like this, doesn't really have many strikers. I think they're going to sign someone in the next couple of days. So that'd be an interesting move for Leicester. Definitely a centre-forward coming in. But it's a bit of a reality sort of wake-up call for Leicester, as if they needed it, of how far they've sunk in a pretty quick time.
Both in action on Tuesday night, Coventry host Millwall, Leicester go to Wrexham. Way back when on Friday night, Middlesbrough left it late to keep the pressure on Cov and hand Eric Ramsey a gallingly late defeat in his first game as West Brom boss. Finished 3-2 at the Hawthorns. I'll let you pick your angle here. Sam, do you want to talk Borough or the Baggies?
I think we'd have to start with West Brom, wouldn't we? Considering it was a box fresh new manager with an interesting new setup. I think everything I've read and what I watched suggests that the fans were quite content walking away from the Hawthorns, not having obviously that body blow of a late winner, but in comparison to what they've been served up recently, a structure in which they felt that they maybe could get some joy, albeit they had a few players playing slightly strange roles, to say the least, with Johnson on the right hand side, across the back five.
So was Price. I mean, it's like he's never watched those players play. That's what I would say. Like, he got it wrong, didn't he? With the players that he used in those positions. Smacks of Amorim, doesn't it? As in, I've got my way. I want three at the back, and you lot are going to fit into it. I didn't think it was that.
Yeah, I suppose the mitigating factor for him is that he had 3 central midfield players out. So in Moet, Malombi and Diakite. So he was a little bit hamstrung there. Bielik and Styles played that role, and it wasn't until he made the changes actually really that they looked a little bit more forceful with Madger and obviously Wallace getting the goal. But I think, yeah, for a first game, I think the Baggies fans were relatively impressed with him. Yeah, so I think reason for optimism for them. Obviously did unbelievably well to get themselves back into the game, but Middlesbrough, I think we have probably bemoaned the lack of consistency in their forward players, but Bergzog, who's rumoured to possibly be moving on, comes up with a brilliant moment, really. A brilliant championship moment, because it wasn't a great game, but it got an incredible climax, and seeing an away support in raptures is always good fun. But I think for the home side, and the fact that he did actually show a little bit of flexibility later on in the game when he pulled Price a little bit deeper and obviously brought on those 2 aforementioned substitutes who affected the game, I think he leaves with a bit of credit. And I expect them to pull away from trouble, despite it being a new manager and clearly a tough period for them. I think they're going to have enough in their armoury to station themselves in mid-table.
Yeah, 4 points above the drop. Massive game at home to Norwich on Tuesday. I'm with you though, Clark. It feels like the thing on the football cliches bingo card at the moment is a new manager coming in and saying, yeah, the lads have done really well because we've given them an awful lot of information over the last couple of days. And we'll just try and maybe keep it a little bit simpler. But there we go. But it's not a problem for Borough, and they're still relatively new boss, right? They had that little sticky spell around Christmas time, but it looks as though they're pulling out of it now with back-to-back wins ahead of a trip to Stoke midweek.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I was super impressed with them when I saw them beat Southampton. They going forward, it's just really good to watch. Really, really ambitious. I love the 2 central midfielders. I think Morris and Hackney is a really good partnership. They sort of interchange. One will go forward, one will sit. You know, it's a little bit old-fashioned in that regard. You know, that's how central midfielders used to play. You go, I'll stay. Next time you go, I'll stay. And, you know, none of this sort of six and eight nonsense. So they're the sort of heartbeat of the team. But the forwards are, you know, not the striker. They're still looking for a striker in form. But guys like Silveira and Bergsorg are stepping up, aren't they, with quite important goals. Whitaker has obviously been on fire. They were really dominant in this game. The reason I'm a little bit critical of Eric Ramsey is because he's played so many players in unfamiliar positions. And also they were really passive. They only had, I think, 31.7% of the ball in the first half. That's not your rip-roaring start, is it, to life on your home, on home turf, albeit you are against a really good team. But they were pretty defensive. They flipped it around. Second half, they had more of the ball. He did change some of the players. Price, when Price came central, they were much better. He scored a good goal. So yeah, he'll have learned a lot from the game, I think, Eric Ramsey. But yeah, for Middlesbrough, very good, very good. I think they're a little bit unlucky to sort of be pegged back, and then justice was kind of served towards the end where they go and get the winner. I say they deserve the winner because by and large West Brom didn't really test them that much. I was looking at some of the numbers. 8 touches inside Middlesbrough's box from West Bromwich Albion in the game. That's not great. I know they've scored twice, but it's not great when you're on, you know, at the Hawthorns in front of your own fans. So yeah, a little bit of work to do, I think.
Yeah. Elsewhere, X-rated scenes at the Valley, where Charlton beat 9-man Sheffield United by a 0-0. The first red for El Hadji Jibril Sumare. So good they named him 4 times for going over the top on Harvey Nibbs, who left the pitch on a stretcher, which is bad. But I did enjoy Garoy Anderson picking up the red card after the red ref dropped it before he showed it, just to make doubly sure. Don't forget your red card. You've got to send him off for that. The second one, pretty atrocious. 2 from Jafet Tanganga. I mean, Clarke, it's just sort of unforgivable, really, isn't it, from Sheffield United?
Yeah, I mean, look, anyone can miss time a tackle. Like, it looked really bad. I don't know whether he's gone to do the player or not. It's, how often do we see it where there's a loose touch, they've overrun it, and then they've lunged in? You see it all of the time, and I don't think looking to do the player, but he's obviously injured him badly. It's a horrible tackle. The second one, when you're down to 10 men, you don't go swinging your arms, do you? It's just nonsense. Chris Wilder is defending him. He's saying, I'm definitely appealing it, but I can't see them.
I think Clarkey, that one, they're both, he's moving at such pace, and yeah, Leeburn gives him a little nudge. So that kind of adds to the momentum, if you like, of his run, but it's ill-advised, isn't it? On, yeah, obviously, a situation where you're already down to 10.
Yeah. And he's the skipper, right? He had the armband on.
Didn't set the best example there. I mean, it completely changed the game. I don't know if you saw this. I've never seen a game like this. First half stats, Charlton, 0 shots. Sheffield United, 10. Second half, Charlton, 12 shots. Sheffield United, 1. So, if ever a double red's always going to change the game, isn't it? But they were going to get beat here. No doubt about that. Charlton were not playing well. Sheffield United were looking good. They were coping easily with Charlton's sort of direct play. And they were causing problems at the other end with Kaminski in good form. So, yeah, I get Wilder's frustration, but it's a big win for Charlton, isn't it? What a big win. And instant impact for Lyndon Dykes. I'm sure Sam will talk us through the target man centre-forward vibe that's going on at the Valley. But, yeah, to have someone that can do what Leeburn does is going to be really handy, I think, for Charlton's second half of the season, because, you know, clearly they're going to be quite long ball and look to hit the big man and pick up the second balls.
Yeah, that was the point I was going to make. Even that combination, I think, Dykes and Carey, because he's a brilliant player for timing runs to get into the box. I think Carey scored a few goals of that early part of the season, and they've gone missing to a degree. So for him to pop up with such an important goal off a Dykes knockdown, really important. I think Harry Clarke as well, right wing back, not probably his best position, but they have been a little bit limited in those wing back roles for Nathan Jones. So I think he's a good signing. Kane Ramsey back as well for this one. So the personnel looked a little bit better, but no, I'm with Clarkey. Sheffield United for 45 minutes were the hugely better side. And I think the Charlton fans, despite being elated with a victory, they walk away concerned about the next few weeks. And when you look at the league table as well, they are an obvious team. Them and Blackburn, sorry, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but them and Blackburn are the two teams that Portsmouth and Norwich are thinking, right, we got to go after them. They're the two we've got to drag in. And if you want to look at the Sheffield United perspective, look at the videos of their supporters at full time. Stand ovation. Chris Wilder was in the stand with someone at one point for some reason, but he was getting his name sung. They were delighted with the showing of their team, down to nine, backs against the wall, and they gave a really good account of themselves, despite obviously Clarkey. Making note of those stats there, which showed it was a complete game of two halves because of the numerical advantage.
I've got two quirky observations for you. One, your opinion, boys. Lyndon Dykes is wearing the 99 shirt.
Straight red. Yeah, I've got that noted as well. Not acceptable.
I can't see anywhere where that's been explained yet. I mean,
it will be because he wants to be the number nine. It's like when it was Zamorano, wasn't it, for Inter Milan, had 8+1.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just weird, isn't it? That's nonsense. The other one is Chris Wilder apparently has displayed the shirts of Wrexham and West Brom in his dressing room to remind the players of the mistakes they made in those games. And he's now said that he's going to hang a Charlton shirt up in the dressing room to symbolise the good things his side did at the Valley. Are we having that? Yes or no? I'll start. No.
No,
I'm not having it. But I don't know if it's bad enough for a straight red. Maybe just a yellow. I did see someone comment on one of the articles about it, saying it's going to look like a JJB or like a Sports Direct or something like that. He's getting a bit carried away there, isn't he? Just showing the video, Chris. That's why. Showing the video.
Both in action midweek. Charlton host Derby on Tuesday. Sheffield United go to Southampton on Wednesday. We're going to go to League One next. And the big one at the top of the division went the way of Cardiff. They won 2-1 at Bradford. It means the Bluebirds are 9 points clear of the third-placed Bantams. Graham Alexander here, using AI to generate his post-match quote. I thought both sides committed fully to the game and the spirit of the competition. And unfortunately, we have come out on the wrong side of a fine line. I mean, his team only managed one shot on target, Clark. He only saw the highlights of this, but that would suggest that maybe Cardiff were worth the win.
No, they were worth the win. But it was one of those where Cardiff, I said ahead of this game, if Cardiff go there and win well, that's a statement. You can probably lock them in for top two, because this is the kind of game that you could easily get tripped up in if you're Cardiff City. But they didn't. They went there on the front foot, took ownership of the game and played brilliantly, I think, for to go 2-0 up. I mean, the two goals were great, weren't they? I really, really enjoyed the goals. I see the one from Turnbull, he sticks it in the top corner. We see an identical goal later on from Bradford, don't we, via Metcalf? And then the short corner that Callum Chambers gets a little nick on. But, they were worth their lead. And then, of course, it changes. You're two up, away from home. Bradford have got to go for it. And then they've got to weather that storm. And obviously, there's a brilliant goal from Metcalf into the top bin. And there were some hairy moments. But I think the big positive for Brian Barry Murphy is the defending. Like, Chambers was really good. Osho, excellent. They did a great job on the strike. Will Swan hooked at half-time. So they really sort of nullified him. Poynton and Sarcevic, neither player created a single chance in this game. I think both had one shot each. So again, Cardiff did a good job on those two guys. So yeah, really, really big win for Cardiff. And look, I think they've got to be odds on now to finish top two. It could be them for the title and everyone else battling out for second now.
Big thing that jumped out to me here, similar to the Charlton Sheffield United, total domination for Cardiff. No shot Bradford until the 39th minute. So that just shows you just how they dictated proceedings, stamping their authority, putting their game on Bradford, their passing game in the midfield three, I think, when they're at it. And we saw it, Matt, I don't know if you covered it with me, but the Chelsea-Cardiff game, Robertson, Turnbull and Wintle, that's a really good trio.
Yeah.
Keep the ball for fun. I mean, Turnbull, he's a lovely footballer. I don't know if he's been injured, that's hindered him a little bit, but he's a lovely footballer and he scored a magic goal. And I think as well, NG went off at half-time and was replaced by Colwill. So that wasn't a defensive move by any stretch, and that actually probably meant or was a reason as to why Bradford came back into it. But he kind of remedied that with Fish coming on later on and going back to a more defensive setup. So big win, yeah. And it was probably, I suppose, the reverse of what we saw at Cardiff, where Bradford counter-attacked to great success, used their physicality to dethrone Cardiff, and here it was the role reversal. So a great result for the Bluebirds.
Surely was. Big win as well for Leighton Orient. They beat Reading 3-1. Sam will tell us a bit about the game shortly. But Adrian, you wanted to wax lyrical about Dom Ballard, not just about his hat-trick here, but in general, you've been impressed with him.
Yeah, I think it's high time we did a scouting report. They've been a bit thin on the ground this season, but Dom Ballard is 20 and he's the leading goal scorer in League One. He's got 15 goals now. Obviously, the hat-trick in this game, left foot, header, winger, right foot as well. You know, lots of variety there. And I just think he's a proper centre forward, a really proper centre forward that can do it all. He's hard working. He's got good movement, and he scores all types of goals. I was looking through his goals this season. Only one penalty, but in there, 4 left footers, 7 right footers, 4 headers, 13 in the box, 2 outside the box. His conversion rate is unreal. You know, 30%. It's the best in League One out of all the top scorers. Only San Nombe, who's only got 6 out of all the top scorers, can top that. He's also scoring at the fastest rate, 113 minutes per goal. Bit of a homer. 11 of the 15 have been at Brisbane Road, but he is a real talisman for them. He's sort of low touch in terms of he doesn't get that involved. I think he's averaging about 15 passes a game, but I've been through all of his goals. There's some good headers in there, I'll tell you. And he's not massive, but he times his runs. He's got good awareness. There's a few 6-yard poaches. Ball's flashed across the face of goal. He makes a run, slides it in. And, you know, in general, I think that he scored some fantastic, fantastic goals this season. A lovely, lovely range of them. And he's a player with pedigree. He's played for England at sort of 15, 16, 17, up to England under 20s, I think. Southampton fans are booing. They're outraged really that he never got a chance. He did go on loan, you remember it. He went to Reading, did all right at the start, then got injured. Blackpool wasn't going great, got injured. Cambridge last year, I think he got 2 goals and 17, so he needed those. But he's 20 now, you know, he's going on those loans when he's 18 19. He's now 20. He's playing more like a man. And I tell you what, if you're looking for players that could go to the higher level, look no further than him, because his range of finishing and the artistry of his centre forward play, I think, has got big potential.
Totally agree. And you have that fire as well when you come away from a big club. And I think he looks like someone who can make his way back to the Premier League, certainly the Championship. And Richie Wellens, I think, is a good manager to help him on his way. And big result. And he's had a new team to have to try and get the chemistry together across the first half of the season, Richie Wellens, and it's starting to happen now. And all these goals for Ballard, interestingly, come in without Aaron Connolly, who was a great foil for him early part of the season. He had 8 and 4 assists, and he's not played since November. So I suppose that tally could have suffered because of that, but he's actually probably improved his ratio. So maybe there's something about the makeup of the team which hasn't affected him, in essence. The second goal, the header, I mean, that was a beautiful header. What a cross. It's effortless, put in from Archibald, who I haven't got it to hand, but he had a bit of a horror injury and it's taken him a long time to get back naturally. But he's a player, Archibald. So, and I think he's flying all of a sudden, which takes a little bit of time. You know, when you get back, you get that initial few minutes and that initial boost, but sometimes that can subside. So I think he's really found his groove now. Ollie O'Neill in the 10, very good as well. But I think it was the back three which has not been overly consistent. Forrester brought in from Bolton, who's a ball playing centre half, really calm on the ball, and obviously good distribution into the midfield players. That was the other facet, along with Ballard, that yielded this win. But Reading are a good side. Seen them a couple of times. Spoke about them on last week's podcast. Loved the goal. And I suppose Ballard, if he has got any things to learn about the art of being a centre forward, he could do worse than look at Marriott at the opposite end. Because they were similar type goals, I thought. The first Ballard one and the Marriott finish. He's brilliant on the shoulder, recognising where the space is, and he's equally adept at finishing with either side, Marriott, which looks like Ballard's got in his armoury as well. So no disaster for Reading. I think Liam Richardson's gone in there at a really important time for the club when there's a lot of change going on, and showed a lot of good.
Let's head into League Two. All the drama was on show at Priestfield. Gillingham scored twice in stoppage time to beat lowly Newport 3-2. Do you love the word lowly? A daft penalty given away in stoppage time for the equaliser from Armani Little, and then Gareth McCleary winning it on 90+9. Clarkey, a gut punch for Newport, but incredibly, they're only 2 points from safety. They've won once since October. They shouldn't still have a chance of staying up.
They shouldn't, but I think they might. I think they might. There's definitely more than green, you know, more than a tinge of green shoots in this recovery. What a game, first and foremost. Gillingham had 19 shots. Newport had 22. If not, that's the highest they've had in a match this season. Harrison Biggins, I think, had 6 of them. Bobby Cammer off the left had 5. So they'll be absolutely devastated not to have won the game, let alone lost it. I bet they can't believe it. So yeah, I think that they can take heart from it. I really do. Obviously, it's a personal disaster for, is it Niakua, who came off the bench and it was like a loose touch inside the box and he makes the foul. Absolute disaster. What? I don't know if you saw this. Armani Little scores the pen and then he death stares the Newport fans all the way as he runs back to the halfway line. He focuses totally on the away bit and he just stares at them, no emotion whatsoever. I've tried to look up whether there's any beef, any history there, but I can't
Newport, a big Versace place, is probably the only thing that I can think of.
That kind of posture is normally reserved for your own supporters if they've been giving you a bit of grief. You can afford to be a bit more animated against the away supporters. I'd have been over there.
Yeah. Do you know what? The away fans are sort of next to the home fans. So it depends how many of they were there. Maybe I've got it wrong and that he was death staring his own supporters. But yeah, it was pretty dramatic. I mean, there were two assists for Max Clark. I mean, you'd have seen the goals, boys, but they are the classic hang the ball up at the far stick crosses from the left back, aren't they? They've come down with snow on them for Masterson and McCleary, but you know, it got the job done. So yeah, it was a really, really good game.
Gillingham, absolute mid-table fodder, right, Sam? Yeah. First win since the 8th of November. They're not going to go down, but they're not in the kind of form that's going to see them make a late run at the playoffs.
I mean, this is unbelievable, really. This is like one of the strangest seasons I can kind of go to for any side at the moment. They had 6 wins in the first 9, 3 draws. They were flying. I saw them, I think they snatched a point at Bromley. I saw them live and they weren't good. And I think that was proved to be around that time where they've just fallen off a cliff. So I expected them to be really competitive and competing this season. But I think their goalkeeper, the Cat, Glenn Morris, who I've mentioned many a time on the podcast, was one of their better players at the weekend. So Newport are creating plenty of chances. Gillingham are conceding plenty of chances. He went to a back four for this game and it didn't really work. Gale's a good young player, but he played at right back. He's been deployed as a centre-half and it didn't really work. So Newport probably can count themselves really unfortunate not to get anything. And it was a surprise to hear that was McCleary's first goal for Gillingham. I thought he'd certainly been on the mark already, and you don't anticipate him being on the end of a far post cross with a towering header. So it was a great finish from him. The only other note I've got was, what on earth was that Newport kit?
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't mind it, but why are they sporting red and white stripes, almost pinstripe?
Well,
I mean,
doesn't feel like that's ever happened.
I'm going to have to find out which 1920s Newport outfit wore that design first.
Do you remember I said earlier on in the show that West Brom had only 8 touches in the Borough box? Well, Gillingham had 41 touches in the Newport box. And Newport, away from home, near the bottom of the league, had 39 touches in the Gillingham box. So I think that tells you that both teams were putting it in the mixer for fun in this match. But it also shows you that they're definitely making progress. They've obviously lost Braybrook as well, Newport, who's gone on loan elsewhere. So fair play to them. I think they're giving it a right go here. And I can actually see them surviving now.
Neither of you would have guessed this. We could have been here for 1,000 years. The away kit is a nod to the colours of Athletic Club of Bilbao and honours the Basque children of 1937 taken in by the Welsh people. During the Spanish Civil War, with the region under attack by Francisco Franco, they were fleeing their war-torn homeland. There were 236 Basque children who escaped the bombing there, finding a new home in Wales, with 56 of them located near Newport.
All over it. It wasn't a bad kit. It just took me by utter surprise, because they're certainly just one colour normally away from home, aren't they? Just like a white, maybe, with a bit of the old amber or whatever they describe the home kit as.
That's how you choose a kit, isn't it? Nice,
yeah,
nice.
All over that, yeah.
Yeah, like it.
And apparently they've sold a lot overseas, so the commercial director's happy as well. Good on them. Right, Sam, we need to talk about Swindon Town. I mean,
do we?
Take your pick here. It's sort of falling apart, isn't it? On and off the pitch.
No.
Can't get the team sheet right.
Well, I can't comment too much on it because I'm not part of the FA panel or whatever, but I mean, it seems pretty ridiculous, doesn't it? I mean, the Drinan not being on the team sheet is one thing, but if Ollie Clark is banned and they've got that wrong, I mean, that's unforgivable, really, isn't it? And they could face the ultimate sanction, couldn't they, which would be removal from the competition. But I mean, the reality is, with respect, the Virtue Trophy, where they're positioned in the table, is not the biggest priority. Add into that, on Wednesday, they play Salford again, which is tough to get your head around. And the prize is a trip to the Etihad in the next round of the FA Cup. So,
both trying to lose, yeah.
So, listen, Salford got beat 8 there, was it? Was that last year or the year before? Where Carl had it must have been last year, where Carl had a right go, didn't he, at playing them off the pitch at the Etihad and came a cropper. So, I don't think it's a disaster. If the worst happens, it doesn't reflect brilliantly on the club for obvious reasons. I was at the Luton game and I saw Tafazzoli having a little jog down the side of the pitch, actually with his mobile phone in his hand. So that was a given that he wasn't involved. I was obviously aware that he was not going to be the substitute because I saw him just having a little gentle loosener, and I saw Drinnen taking part of the warm-up with the team. So I knew that he wasn't on there, but Tafazzoli was on the team sheet that we were handed. So something's gone awry. It's about a portal. These things can happen. If the team has been given in whatever fashion by Swindon at the right time and someone's made a boo-boo at the EFL or wherever, then they could get away with that one. But the Ollie Clark one, obviously, if he is banned, and it's normally the length, Clarky, correct me if I'm wrong, but going back to my own experiences, it's normally you're banned from one date of the first team game to the third date of the third. If it's a three game ban,
yeah, I mean,
so any game that comes
game,
during that
it?
Period,
yeah.
You're banned for, yeah.
Yeah, I would have assumed that he would be suspended for that because, you know, it's not
a reserve game, is it?
Exactly.
But reserve games used to count as well back in the day. You know, that used to be part of the suspension as well, I think. So, yeah, I don't know on that. But the bigger picture is they're going brilliantly. I enjoyed watching them at Luton. I actually thought they were the more cohesive team. The stats would show you that Luton maybe deserved to get a draw in that Football League Trophy game. But I actually enjoyed watching Swindon, very flexible tactically, so much so that I was working overtime on the gantry to actually understand what they were playing. And I think Ollie admitted at the weekend against Salford that he maybe got it wrong in terms of the starting setup. But they're a cohesive unit. They've got a nice balance between playing short, some good technical players in the midfield like Kilkenny. Tom Nichols, my old teammate Exeter, is now Perlo. I don't know if you knew that, Clarky. He plays in central midfield, which is just bizarre to me because he was such a good goal scorer, such a good pressing forward. He's now a ball playing midfielder and he does it to great effect. Then you've got arguably the best striker at the moment in Drinnen, who is just so full of confidence. Came on at Luton, had about 3 or 4 efforts, hit shooting from everywhere, scores a brilliant header against Salford at the weekend, a header which he didn't really have any right to score, but bulleted it into the roof of the net. So you can play into him, you can play into Palmer. Obviously, those two are physical. So the team's got good balance, and they brought 4 players in the last week. Young players with best years ahead of them out of academy. So it feels like there's a little bit more thought going into the recruitment as well. So, yeah, a lot of criticism, and probably rightly so, in the last week because of off the field issues. But on the pitch, a lot of good, and it's going to be a hell of a battle with MK Dons and, help me out here, Clarkey, Salford, and obviously Bromley, Walsall. This team's probably that. Notts County will be another one. From a slightly deeper position, that is going to be a hell of a battle for those top 3 positions, but I'm optimistic that they can make it.
That FA Cup game, it was one that was postponed, is on Tuesday night, and yeah, I think you're right, it's not particularly attractive, is it? Because you go to Man City, Exeter asked to have their share of the gate receipts for the third round game, City said no, it's not televised, you really need to be getting smacked double digits like the Grecians did.
Do you know what's interesting is you see, just going back to the Virtue Trophy, the Luton fans, I think, are all kind of accepting that they got beaten by the better side. just let Swindon go through. do you know what I mean? So I think they, obviously, their focus is very much on Jack Wilshere, which has yielded improvement, but getting in the playoffs, I would suggest for them.
Do you think Swindon will beat City if they get through?
Comfortably, mate. Comfortably. now, it would be a nice one because in my memory, they've had a couple of plum home draws. They played City relatively recently. Palmer scored, actually, Cole Palmer. It was the night that I went, oh, he's a player. He kind of swanned around, megging people and whipped one into the top corner. So, yeah, they've had a few nice ones at the County Ground, but obviously that's a great one to tick off for the club, and Salford have been there, haven't they? So hopefully they do the honourable thing.
Yeah, I can see a bromance between Pep and Ian Holloway, like we did with Pep and Neil Warnock. Let's get on to our predictions, shall we? Goodness me, Clarky, you've got the right to crow here. 5 points last week, just one for Sam and I. That perfect scores really do boost you, don't you? And you got the one all between Swansea and Birmingham just right. So you've extended your lead still further.
I never fully trust the numbers, man. I'm going to go back and listen to the podcast and just make sure he's got it right here, because I thought I was on the money.
I know I got five. Yeah, I don't know about you, Muppets. But yeah, 47 for me, 35 to Samuel, 32 for Matt, who's very much in the running for to overtake Mr. Parkin at the minute. So,
well,
yeah.
Let's see. West Brom Norwich is first on the block. Winner's privilege then, Clarky. You can go first on this.
Well, let's go with the result that sort of got me the on the nose last time. Let's go with West Brom 1, Norwich 1. Good result for Norwich at Wrexham. A lot of both teams to score going on in Norwich games. One apiece.
Sam?
I like the draw, but I will extend it to a share of 4 goals. 2-2.
Oh, that's what I was going to go for. Let's say that Eric Ramsey will get the W and it'll be 2-1 to West Brom. I'll have Southampton, Sheffield United up next. Oh, Southampton, bad vibes FC at the moment, aren't they? I think this is going to be a 0-2 win for the Bladesmen. What about you, Adrian?
Yeah. Not impressed with Southampton at the moment.
Don't appoint the caretaker. How many times have we said it?
Yeah, I wish I'd backed Hull at the weekend. They can't defend, Southampton. And an angry Blades team will get the job done. It will finish. Saints 1, Sheffield United 3.
Okay. I like the fact that you're inputting that into your own spreadsheet as you say it there. Sam, what you got for this one?
I am more than happy to play tactically here. I think two long journeys for Sheffield United, couple of suspensions, Southampton 2 home games, quick succession. They got good players, they're not showing it. 2-1 Saints. Ooh. Tactic.
Big shout. You go first then, Sam, on our final game, which is perfectly set up for you, isn't it? It's the team you love the most against the team that you can't abide. Oxford versus Queen's Park Rangers.
No, don't put words in my mouth, mate.
You hate them.
I'm regularly seen in Oxford Town Centre these days because I've got some very good friends who live there. So come on, let's not be saying that. And I'm working with Simon Watts this week as well, so I don't want him getting me in a headlock. I will go comfortable. I quite like the 2-1 here, but I've just had that, haven't I? I'll go 2-0 Rangers. They'll rediscover their shooting boots here.
Wow, okay. I think this is going to be a narrow win for Matt Bloomfield to get his time off and running. 1-0, I think, for Oxford. Adrian?
Yeah, Oxford are winning this. 2-1.
Sorry, is it at Oxford this? It is, isn't it? Because it was 0-0 at QPR, wasn't it? It was a horrible game. Can I soften that and go for the 1-0?
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll allow it. Before we get to Tweet of the Week, let me remind you again of the offer from our partners, Quinbet. Where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum 3 bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. Whoa, that was difficult for me to get through without a heavy cold, but they say nurses are heroes, podcast hosts can be too. Tweet of the week then to finish comes from Hull City's Ollie McBurney. It's a quote tweet of the official account, which said, taking home the 3 points, and an emoji that I don't understand, hashtag HCAFC. Can't see Ollie in this picture actually as it goes, but he says, 3 more huge ones, get me back up north, 2 exclamation marks, 3 tiger emojis. Couple of things to go out here. Sam, why does he hate the south so much, and what do we think of huge ones as a way of describing points?
I like it. It's unorthodox, but it works, doesn't it? Yeah, it's fine. We all know what he means, and it's a different terminology. No problem with it. I don't know why he's riling everyone in the whole of the south of the country. But
I think he's missed out a word.
Do you reckon?
3 more huge ones. He meant to put, to get me back up north. What are we saying?
No,
I think he just doesn't like the south.
Oh, that's a bit brutal.
He's a northern lad, though, isn't he? But he played for Swansea, obviously, famously.
Well, he's a Scot, isn't he? Good use
is
of
he?
The tiger emoji.
Not a Scot, surely.
He is a Scot, yeah.
He plays for Scotland, but he's definitely not Scottish.
No, he was born in Leeds.
I know a few of those.
Yeah, there you go. Born, are you looking at me? Get my B cap out in a minute. I'm actually near it. No, I haven't got a problem. The thing I was going to say to begin, he likes a bit of needle, doesn't he? He likes to winding up. He's not shy. in riling a few. So that's very in character and I don't mind it.
Yeah, Charlie Parsons, give it a rest, pal. Somebody, Anab Lee Jules, I think that is. I had you at 17s to score twice and you never got a sniff, but what a shift you put in. That's a little low-key dig at him there, Clarkie. I mean, this is all right, isn't it? I quite like a bit of variation on the lads gave it everything. Support were great as ever.
I like to think he's on the bus. He's ready for the journey home and it's going to be a bit of a beast of a journey, isn't it? It's like three more huge ones, get me back up north, or three more huge ones to get me up north, to get me back up north. You know, it's nice to travel that kind of distance on a Saturday night when you really, you know, back in the day, you wanted to be out of the pub or the club, but you had to ride it off a little bit for these long trips. So, you know, to get three huge ones in the bag, I think, yes, there's no better feeling.
He's retweeted somebody above that, and it is, it begins with a swear word, so I won't read it out, but do go and have a look at that. Also in his bio, he describes himself as professional athlete, which I enjoy as well.
He's useful though, isn't he? He's useful. He's still got it. I think he's
good 9 in 17 from 13 starts in the champ. So yeah, he's been a good addition for them. No doubt about that. And he must have loved that. I know they got relegated, but having a season at Las Palmas last season, that really does sound like fun amidst the occasional grind that can be the life of a championship journeyman. So well done to him. Well done to you for sticking to the end as well, listener. We should be back in your ears next week with another show. But for now, from Adrian, from Sam, and from me, it is goodbye.